This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Podbay 2A, a mile above sea level, Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of status out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Randy? Can you feel it?
I'm all over it, Lou. Good morning. Good morning
to you, too. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So what's new and exciting, Randy? Randy, I haven't talked to you in quite a while.
But I've heard you on the Fiend since then, though, so I probably know more about what's happening with you than with me. But I was been on with Jim Babb more recently for some reason. I guess he tolerates me better than some, and thought that I would come over and bug you for an evening. So here we are, and there was did you see the story about the former head of the U.S. Special Forces now admitting that the Islamic State would not exist if Bush hadn't invaded Iraq?
As a matter of fact, I did see that.
Now they tell us, right? When we could have done something. Did you read that? How we could have avoided that?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, a lot of people have been saying it long before this guy. But anyway, the former commander of U.S. Special Forces in Afghanistan and Iraq admitted that strategic blunders by the Bush administration had led to the rise of Islamic State militants. Retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn told the German newspaper Der Spiegel that Americans allowed their anger of the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks to lead them into disastrous military policies that failed to address the root cause of terrorism and actually help create new and more brutal terrorists. So I guess finally we have somebody who's not like some hippie, dope-smoking, libertarian peace activist that's just, I'm a pacifist, anti-war, blah, blah, blah. No, actually somebody who theoretically should know something about war.
Yeah, but did you notice, though, the specific mistake that the U.S. government made was not really what you would think. I mean, you said it there for a minute. I think you said that our disastrous military policies actually help create new and more brutal terrorists. Well, that's a no-brainer. You know, you got a family of six people and you murder five of them, that last teenage boy that got out. What's he going to be? No surprise there. We make five terrorists for every one that we kill.
What do you mean, we?
Yeah, that's a good point, too. But the general, as reported here, now, the German newspaper Der Spiegel, now, you've been in Germany, so you got that pronunciation right?
Jawohl.
I appreciate that. And but he said he said something else, though, that kind of bugged me. He said that the misunderstanding was so great that Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, if I said that right, having never been to Iraq, so I could have screwed it up big time, but who now heads ISIS, was freed in 2004 from a U.S. military prison after the U.S. military commission cleared him as being a harmless fellow, well met. And that was kind of interesting. While at the same time, they kept five guys that actually were harmless so they could let him out, I suppose. But I'm thinking that's kind of a coincidence, because I can't imagine that but for the USG letting Abu Bakr, or whatever his name is,
out. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi.
Yeah, that guy. I'm thinking somebody else would have stepped up, because a lot of people dig cutting heads off and all of that. So I'm thinking that wasn't our biggest mistake. I'm thinking the biggest mistake was, you know, creating more new and more brutal terrorists as our main thing. And, of course, we've gotten very, very good at it.
We?
Yes, yes, yes. The people that run all around us every day as we go about our business. It's kind of revolting.
Yeah, I mean, some of the stuff are things that I discussed with Prof. CJ last week on the show in my interview with him from the Dangerous History Podcast.
And I think I heard that one.
Yeah.
And but I don't remember what you said about this.
If there are lessons from history to be learned, you can make sure that they will be the wrong ones. Going in and destabilizing an area, a region, a country, whatever, it's going to have massive repercussions. Now, Saddam Hussein, not a good guy, but under Saddam Hussein's rulership there, women had it a lot better than they do today. It wasn't a hotbed of terrorism, and despite all the saber rattling, you know, there wasn't so much outward aggression going on. And if you go back to the invasion of Kuwait in 1989, the U.S. ambassador basically gave him the go ahead and said, "Yeah, have at it. We have no interest in Middle Eastern affairs. This doesn't concern us." But But essentially, when you're looking at the response, after September 11th, and I was still a status neocon at the time, I was just like, bomb somebody, bomb them. I don't care who it is. Go in, tear them up. You know, we need to teach them a lesson. Kill a million of them for every one of us. And it was the, how could I put it? It was the ready, fire, aim strategy. Just go do something. And by going in, I was behind Afghanistan because, well, you know, hey, that's where Al-Qaeda is. You know, go in there, you know, take care of Al-Qaeda and then move on. And, you know, unfortunately, it didn't work that way because
I bet you didn't fall for Iraq, though.
Not really. Not really. Yeah. I was opposed to Iraq in the beginning, and that was for strategic purposes. I saw Iraq as being a primary thing, and there was no clear evidence. I even wrote a letter to the U.S. Senator for the tax farm of Michigan, or as I would have called it back then, I redressed my grievances with my elected representative.
Who was that?
Horrible. That was Senator Carl Levin, and supposedly I got a phone call, I don't know, a month or two later regarding, you know, the letter that I wrote. But anyway, my concern was that it was going to detract away from fighting the primary enemy, Al-Qaeda, and I just turned into a royal cluster bleep, which it did. And once the invasion started, I was like, well, it wasn't a really good idea, but it's on, so let's get behind them troops and, you know, hope they don't bleep it up. And, they got bleeped up.
One good thing that really came out of all this, though, was that we saw that Saddam Hussein was bad. Well, every dictator is going to be bad, but
every politician
we found out
is going to be bad.
But we found out that bad can also be a relative term, and so we got rid of Saddam Hussein, and we got worse. And then we went and we got rid of Gaddafi, who had mostly been behaving himself from our standpoint. I'm sure his people might have felt differently since Ronald Reagan, you know, bombed him back in the 80s or something after he took down the
Ronald Reagan was not on those jets.
No, but that's a moot point, of course.
Since Don Reagan gave the order to have him rubbed out, and he survived.
He survived, but he had he was not as bad as what's replaced him, and now Al Qaeda. I think ISIS is now a growing concern concern. I don't mean they're concerned about it. I mean it's growing and it's there in Libya and spreading, more terrorists from there. So by now we have surely totally learned our lesson that you don't get rid of a dictator just because you don't like him, because you're almost what were the odds, like 120% likely to get something worse, which is why we wouldn't dream of overthrowing, say, Assad. Wait a minute. I take that back. We are trying to still overthrow Assad.
What's this we stuff?
Never mind. That's for your benefit, and I get you every time.
Go put a Satoshi in a collectivism jar.
It's for you, Lou. No, nobody learns from that, and I don't think they want to learn because I don't think the leadership of this country is interested in not making these mistakes. I think people profit from these things. ISIS is the best thing for government power in many, many countries, and particularly ours. That's come around because the first thing you got to do is you scare the people, and when you scare them, then you can control
them. Do whatever you want.
And now we have that fellow out in California that killed 14 people, and it seems that they're saying that he's Muslim, and I'm just afraid. Really think that this is the hysteria is going to go wild over that.
And a government employee. I saw an article on it earlier, right before showtime. He was a county inspector out there for something.
A health inspector, right?
Something like
that. He inspected restaurants. Maybe he didn't enjoy his job, but those guys, their job is that they just go around and spread unhappiness everywhere they go.
Yeah, they're part of the department of making everything ungood. But going back to Iraq and ISIS and all this other stuff, it's always amazing that people have the Keynesian military mentality of, well, we just have to drop more bombs. We just have to stimulate more peace in the Middle East. And they always have the same excuse when the plan backfires. And they say, well, we just didn't drop enough bombs. There's still people alive. And I just short of genocide, you're not going to quell this stuff with bombs. And this goes back to the conversation I had with CJ and also his little series on the history of irregular warfare. But anyway, we'll be back. More Freedom Fiends after this.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
You do the intro. This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're back from the market. I'm Randy England, and Lou Fiend is with me here tonight. And Lou, how are you? I assume
I'm
you're there.
Pretty good.
There you go. There
I'm
you
here.
Go.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Hey, I got a quick question for you. I didn't get a chance to ask you. Did you make a video from Liberty Fest this year?
I did make some video, but I haven't been able to do it yet. And when I didn't get it done quickly, I thought, well, if I can't get it done when I ought to have, I should at least get it done in time so that you could put one up when it's time to promo the next one. So yeah. I haven't forgotten. Well, that's a lie. I actually had forgotten for the past month or so. But I had been pinching myself for a while to get it done. And I wasn't diligent was the deal. I'll try to do better. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, because I shared it with somebody this past week, saying, hey, you need to come out to Liberty Fest, and here's the type of stuff that you can see. And the video that you did for 2014 was really, really good. As a matter of fact, I still watch that, I don't know, every month or two, just get a warm, fuzzy little flashback.
So yeah, we're talking about not the biggest Liberty Festival in the world, but the most
coolest,
friendly, down-home, fullest, wonderful people one in Michigan. That's every summer in August, right? In rural Michigan at the Circle Pines Center. And I've been there a couple years in a row and just had a great time. And so, you know, mark your calendar for next August. You probably even have a date picked out for it now, right?
As a matter of fact, we do. It's going to be the weekend before Labor Day.
Okay. Do me a favor, though. Can you arrange for it not to be too hot or too humid?
I'll get right on that.
That would be really good. Last year was beautiful. Not last year, this year. Last year was hot and humid, so, you know.
Yeah, and a little bit rainy, too.
But I'm down here in Missouri, you know, way south of you. And when I go up north, I'm expecting it to be cooler. And if I'm laying there in my sleeping bag and just sweating like a pig, I'm thinking I could have done that in Missouri. So that's kind of I'm putting in for some nice weather. Yeah.
What you need to do is you need to get a little battery operated camping fan. And yeah, we're going to go off topic and go into camping supplies here. There's one by Ozark Trail. It goes for like $14-15 at Walmart, and it takes 8D batteries. But those batteries last forever. I probably have used it for at least a week and a half of nighttime use. So I put it on low, and it has a nice little breeze that'll keep you cool, and you know, in the hot and humid weather and everything, and yeah, it's really good. Now, I mean, granted, you're going to spend a lot of money on the batteries, you know, but the batteries do last quite a while. So overall, it's a very solid investment.
Well,
I highly recommend it.
There's probably time for me to get that on my Amazon list in time for Christmas. So thank you.
Yeah, so you could probably even use the Freedom Fiends Amazon link.
You should use the Freedom Fiends Amazon link, and so should I.
So, yeah.
Very good. Very good.
And as a matter of fact, I also use it over at the Assault Kitchen when I'm cooking, because, you know, it gets hot over there, so.
Have you ever had any health inspectors bother you at the Assault Kitchen?
No, I have not.
They have. Now, this last summer at Pork Fest up in New Hampshire, the health inspectors did show up to harass people, right?
Yes,
did you have your assault kitchen? Did you have your assault kitchen set up?
I wasn't at Pork Fest this last year.
Oh, you weren't. Never mind. Well, they would if you had been there. They were coming to see your license, you know, for having up that kitchen. If you were thinking of feeding other people out of it,
but. Well,
They got run out of town on a rail is what happened.
Well, you only need a license when you're engaging in commerce. See, government, like anarcho-communists, they can't stand when you actually exchange money for goods. So they want
So you're saying the local, they don't harass the local soup kitchen or food bank? I bet they do.
Well, not as much as they do the capitalistic ventures. But anyway, more Freedom Fiends after this.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Freedom Fiends. It sounds like there's some kind of a wildcat out there, like maybe a wampus cat or something. But anyway, Randy, you came up with some interesting stuff being the Freedom Fiends legal correspondent. What do you got?
Is that what I am?
Something like that.
Well, I found an article that was just stunning to me, and about federal agents. It says it was about the forfeitures when they think maybe or just suspect that you have committed a crime, they can take any property or money that they can, that you have, that they can somehow figure out some way in some of the many multiverses that is somehow connected to the crime that you may have committed. And they find it, and they find you got $10,000. They just take the money, and you can't do much about it. And if you can get it back, the burden is on you to get it back. And it's in many places. And this article was talking about how in 2014, the federal government confiscated $4.5 billion from Americans through civil asset forfeiture. From in a report from the Institute for Justice, which are usually good guys. And that part didn't shock me in the least, that they took $4.5 billion. I don't think I would have been stunned if they had said $9 billion instead of half of that. The part that shocked me was that the same year, FBI records show that burglars... You know, burglars, like when people break into a home and steal your shotgun or something like that. This is a crime that happens in every city every single night. And it happens all over the country. It's probably one of the biggest criminal losses that happen, where people break into places and do property damage and take stuff. It's a bad crime. It's one that causes a lot of people a lot of trouble. And burglars only took $3.9 billion worth of money and property in that same year. And how is it that the government is a bigger burglar and thief than the burglars? And it's worse than that, because you know how people thrown around a little bit, different terms, like you have the term stealing, which means to appropriate property from another person for yourself, and the word burglary, which means to break into a house or a building and take stuff or to commit a crime inside it. And what the federal government does in asset forfeiture, it's worse than stealing, it's worse than burglary, it's robbery. Because robbery is defined as stealing property or money by threat of force. And, of course, that's what they do. So, technically, and this is my job here as House Counsel for Freedom Fiends, is to make sure everybody understands that what the government does is not theft, it's not burglary, it's robbery. But anyway, I thought that was just amazing. I mean, like I said, burglars are a big problem, and they're dangerous, but they're not near the menace. And the article, the other thing about this article is that it's limiting these numbers to federal civil asset forfeiture. This is the federal government confiscated this. The states confiscate enormous amounts of money, and in my state, in Missouri, things are quite a bit tighter, in the sense that you can confiscate the money, but you can't keep it unless the person, you can actually prove that the person, the money was connected to the crime, and they have to actually be convicted of the crime. So I mean I'm not excusing them, I'm just saying it can get a whole lot worse than that, because it can just be on suspicion, and you don't have to actually be convicted of the crime to lose your money with the feds. But there are states that have very draconian forfeiture laws that are, it's as easy for them to get the money as it is for the feds, maybe easier. I don't know all of the states, but there has to be a huge amount of money that the states, so add to that, I mean, maybe you could double that $4.5 billion. Maybe they are stealing $9 billion. See, I broke my own rule. I said stealing. They're robbing, $4.5 billion plus whatever the states are stealing. It's really evil. If you put enough money in your pocket to go on a 2-week vacation, that'd probably be enough money to get it stolen from you if you got stopped by a cop. Because they'd look and say, well, nobody should have $2,000 in their pocket. Or some poor guy who's driving from New York to Los Angeles to rent an apartment and take a job, and he may have more money than that. He might have several $1,000s in his pocket to get started across the country. And, I mean, that's going to just get their eyes blinking and smiles on their faces.
Well, I guess we found something the government does better than the private sector: robbery. Because,
you know, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, because there's probably a lot more burglars and armed robbers and muggers and everything else out there in the private sector than there are cops. Because I think the inflated number of sworn law enforcement men and women is under a million, something like that. And they'll count reserve officers and everything else. But interestingly enough, in this article, it says here that as recently as 2008, the loot, the booty that was taken from robbery and piracy was just $1.5 billion. And there's compelling evidence that law enforcement agencies use this license to bolster their budgets in lean years. In the words of one officer, civil asset forfeiture funds are like pennies from heaven. It gets you a toy or something that you need.
Pennies?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. It gets you gold eagles from heaven.
Yeah. It gets you a toy or something that you need in the way that we typically look at it, to be perfectly honest.
One of the reasons that it's going up all the time is because of states like my state, Missouri, where I live. The asset forfeiture laws are a little more restrained. Like, not only do you not lose your money unless you get convicted of the crime, but the money doesn't go to the cops. And I think it goes to the schools, but the point here is not where it goes. As long as it would go anywhere except to the guy who's stealing it from you, okay? And because the worst thing that could possibly happen is to give the money to the cops, because that at least if you give it to, I mean, I don't care what you give it to. I mean, if you give it to the schools, well, that's not good. Or if you give it to the roads, maybe, or something. If you give it to anybody except the cops, you're taking away a lot of the cops' incentive to even bother, because they're not getting to line their own pockets with toys and things. The feds are willing to share, though.
I can make an argument against what you're saying, because, all right, let's say you put
well,
this.
Go ahead.
Okay, let's say you put this confiscation to the schools. Rather than allocating X number of dollars to the schools through the general fund, they'll just get that money allocated through the robbery, and that way increased money can go to the robbers out of the general fund.
Well, it doesn't work that way, though, because every state agency is competing for the dollars that the legislature is going to be passing out. And the police, they have no assurances. Well, not just from the legislature. It could be the city council if it's the local police department. They're not going to want it. I mean, there's a big competition inside the government for every dollar. And if the garbage man can get a buck and keep it from the cops, he will. And
yeah, but the cops are literally the hand that feeds the legislature. You remember after the whole Gardner thing, and the NYPD said, oh, we're going to quit enforcing all this malum prohibitum, and we're going to quit being revenue generators or road pirates and all this other nonsense, and the city government was complaining about all the lost revenue. So
yeah, but still, the incentive is different if the money is going to anybody except the cops. They can't assume that somebody is just going to walk around, pat them on the head, and hand them some cash. So, no, but the feds are there.
That's exactly what is going to happen.
No, the feds are there. No, the Fed. Here's what the feds are going to do. They're going to let the feds do the. They're going to take the thing and let the feds do it, and the feds agree to share the money with the police department, and they do an end run about around the state law that might be using the money on the potholes, which it would not be nearly as objectionable as giving it to the robbers that are taking the money from somebody. So, I mean, that I think that is what's driving the federal numbers up. Because the states are figuring out ways that they can keep at least part of that money, not the, well, the states, the law enforcement in the states, they can keep some of the money if they send the thing to the feds. Yeah. So well, the corruption just gets worse.
They will still get it from the state legislature because the cops will say to the state legislators, oh, you like all this revenue stream? Well, guess what? The wheels got to get greased.
Yeah, but you also have to look at what they use the money for. They use the money for things that the legislature would never buy them. They buy toys that the legislature wouldn't buy them. They buy donuts, you know, so that anytime, you know, you go into the squad room at the police department, you know, at night or day, you know, there's nice donuts and stuff there. Trust me, I used to go in there, and they have things there that... that the legislature or the city council is not going to provide. And that's what the, I think, didn't you read the thing? Where did it say that, you know, we use this to get, oh, it's kind of like pennies from heaven. It gets you a toy or something that you need is the way we look at it. It literally is for toys because by a toy, they mean a luxury that they would be hard for them to pry out of the legislature or the city council. Really, it's just nice stuff that that they would like to get. They work that way. You know, they're just the same as we are in one sense. You know, in a business or something, we would love to have frivolous expenditures. We want an espresso machine in the break room, and the boss says that isn't necessary.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the Fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
So, Randy, I got a couple follow-up questions to you from the robbery article that we're just reading. First off, in your tax farm of Missouri, they have a more restrained form of robbery, it appears, because you said that, you know, they have restrictions on how they can rob and everything else.
Yeah.
How long? So, if I have this correct, what they do is they confiscate the money and they put it in like a escrow account or something like that, and then you go to trial, and if you're found guilty, then they keep it, right?
Yeah, I used to do this when I was a prosecutor all the time, and they would take the $5,000 that they found in the safe, in the drug dealer's safe, along with all his cocaine, And they would take that, and when they sent it over, I would have to file. I mean, it was kind of a pain in the behind. I would have to file a petition with the circuit court to forfeit the $5,000. And then the court would stay the whole proceeding and say, well, this has to wait. And then we had to finish with the criminal case. And if the guy was convicted, then you went back to the court. And, of course, then the judge would say, yeah, the money now belongs to the state of Missouri. And, yeah, it happened all the time, constantly. And okay.
So you as the persecutor, being the co-worker to the cops, you and your co-worker would go to your other co-worker, the judge, and say, hey, we want to keep this money. And the judge would say, well, let's, you know, check ourselves and make sure we did everything correct. Is that what you're saying?
Correct you one thing. We weren't actually co-workers. In this case, the cop, he worked for the city. The judge worked for the state, and I worked for a county. Of course, it was all kept separate and clean and honest, you know, right?
So in other words, it's like the different subsidiaries of one giant corporation. Okay. So, Ian, how long would it usually take for these trials to happen? How long would you keep this person's stolen money?
Oh, well, it would take until the criminal case was done, and that could be anywhere from a few months to a year. And at the end of that time, it was once the guy, say, pled guilty to the thing, you just go in and ask the judge, let us have the money now, and the judge would give it to you. It was no big deal.
Okay,
it was a done deal at that point.
And while you guys were holding on to the stolen money, the accused could not use it to, I don't know, pay for legal fees to actually get the money back.
Yeah, that was a problem for them sometimes. Definitely.
Okay. So, all right. Yeah, just want to make sure everything was above board. Oh, by the way, doesn't the U.S. Constitution say something about people can't be deprived of property or liberty without a trial or something like that?
Well, there was a trial.
Yeah, but, well, with the feds and the places.
No, that not with restricted. The feds. No, yeah.
Okay.
You're right. Why you're right.
How can the feds violate the Constitution? What's up with that?
Well, now the procedure in federal court, and I haven't actually been involved with the federal procedures because I was in state court all that time, and in federal court where I practice criminal law, I haven't actually had any of my clients had their money forfeited simply because most of the drug dealers that I've represented don't have any money. I mean, this is not a business that you get into, you know, to have $5,000 in your safe. Some guys do, but usually just the guys at the top of the local food chain, the ones that are out, you know, selling it for him on the streets, haven't got anything. They got nothing. So, yeah. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know that much about the feds. I'm sure they have a process that has to be followed, but the idea is that they can get the money on less than a conviction. I mean, you have to have the suspicion there, and what the level that you have to prove is much lower than getting a conviction. So a person who's suspected, you know, could lose their money.
I am really bewildered that the feds would violate the Constitution like that. Maybe they don't know. Maybe you should draft a legal brief or something like that and explain to them.
Yeah, but
maybe it's just an oversight on their part.
You're missing the fact that it wouldn't matter how much process they were giving you, you know, or what the standard was. Where in the Constitution does it say they can take your money for having a plant or something?
Well, that's
the ridiculous. You got to go back to the very beginning and say the whole system is corrupt without giving due process. Hell with due process.
Well, that's a whole other can of worms.
Pardon my French.
Maybe we'll go fishing with those worms in the second hour. More Freedom Fiends coming up.
We'll be back.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squigelts from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tie tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch, and now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Theme, symposium of unsupervised sounds that caress your freedom fiend bone. Hi, I'm Randy England, and co-host Lou Fiend is with me tonight. Lou's hacked into Lou has hacked into the CIA's subspace mind control to beam our pirate signal of protest directly to your frontal lobes. So lose those tinfoil hats and know that you are free. Hi, Lou.
Hi there. And that's kind of untrue because I can barely remember my Facebook
You are just too humble, that's all. And you don't want them to know what you're doing.
No, seriously, so, the only thing I can hack at is bushes out in the yard with a machete.
Yes, and you don't have to do much of that in Michigan in December, do you?
Actually, it's kind of mellow this year. There hasn't been any real accumulation of snow. As a matter of fact, opening day of deer season, Sunday, November 15th, it got up to 57 degrees, so I was out in the woods with a orange vest, long sleeve t-shirt, and sunglasses, and mosquitoes were flying around.
Oh boy, the mosquitoes would be too much to take.
Well, I've actually seen mosquitoes out there deer hunting in like 2 feet of snow. You get a nice sunny day where the sun is kind of warm and it hits the eggs and they start hatching. They're so, yes, you can see mosquitoes in the snow.
Yeah, well, I didn't like the wasps on Thanksgiving either. But, hey, Lou, I was talking a bit about I'm going to discharge my legal duties at the end of the last hour. We were talking about the feds robbing people with civil forfeitures to a tune greater than what burglars in this country do, and that's kind of bad. But there's another thing that's happening that it's a little better than that. I mean, everything that the government does, even if they do something that seems it's in the right direction, it's still got some problems. But I think on the 20th of November, a decision was handed down from the Arizona Supreme Court. You never notice in court decisions, you know, like if you had a decision or something, Lou, you would probably just hand yours over, or you would hand it out maybe, or something like that.
Or I would just go do it.
The Supreme Court hands it down, and everyone understands what that means. They hand down their decisions. And this was about the situation for the marijuana laws in the state of... Hey, Hello? Is that Michael?
Yeah, is this the Maserati and fly fishing show?
Yes, it is. Go ahead,
Paul. Yeah, it is. It is, Mike.
This is Michael Dean, first-time caller, long-time listener. I don't have a Maserati yet, but I have a Ford truck, and I don't do a lot of fly fishing, but I have a boat. I go out on Lake Michigan. I don't know if you guys can relate. It's kind of lowbrow. You ever done that stuff before you got your Maseratis and your fly fishing?
Is this in the Upper Peninsula?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, everything is
the Wang of America. Yeah.
Is anything highbrow in the Upper Peninsula, Lou?
No.
The distended duodenum of America.
Okay, so tell us about your worms, Michael. What's going on with your colon?
I'm calling about, someone just ordered buttons, and they said I like the worms buttons. You could just give me five of each of those two buttons, Merry Christmas and worms. And I'm like, I can't break up. I'd be breaking up, you know, 5-10 sets, but... maybe if you want a special order, drop ship wholesale, a couple hundred worms buttons, we can do that. So, I want to talk about my duodenum, my innermost chamber that I'm
Are you going to reveal that your labs came back? Is that what this is?
Yeah, my labs came back, and you know, it could be bad news or it could be good news. It's kind of in between. The polyps they removed from my colon turned out to be precancerous, which is...
It's very different from cancerous.
It's very different from cancerous, but it's very different from, you know, straight up good news. Were yours precancerous, Randy?
No, and I was fortunate, but go ahead.
It means they got him in time, probably, but
it does mean that.
I'm going to need a colonoscopy every 2 years and could get cancer a lot easier than someone who... does not have that result.
Your main thing is that they get to harass you much more frequently. That's the biggest downside. Seriously.
Part of the polyp industrial complex. Yeah. I can't even pronounce what kind of polyps they said they were. They were amatominous was the term.
Sounds like amatonius.
Yeah, it's close enough. So I was wondering if we could use those for bait for fly fishing. You know, if you just tied a little bit of hair on one of those and tied it to a... Because they took them out, I could probably do a FOIA request and get them. I mean, aren't they my property?
I think those might work on carp or catfish. And as a matter of fact,
some bottom dwellers, is what you're saying?
Yeah. Now, I don't know.
You're saying stuff out of my colon would be bait for bottom dwellers?
Would you want to do that to a fish?
Trash fish.
Precancerous polyps.
I'm trying to have a good sense of humor about this. Lou, tell me what you think.
What's a carp or catfish? And I don't know. I don't know if these things are solid or if they're kind of like a ball of goo or something like that. One of the things that we do with salmon eggs up here is we will parboil them, and then there's this little coating that you can put on there. They'll make them pink or orange or whatever, and use that for catching little menominee.
I don't know what parboil. I don't know what most of those words mean. Parboil, menominee. What is that?
I said that last word again. That's weird.
Oh, menominee is a type of fish. It's a little bit smaller than a whitefish, but it's part of the whitefish family. And parboiling.
Oh, I thought it was some kind of a marriage or something. Never mind.
No, but anyway, parboiling them is you get water going to a rolling boil. I mean, they're pretty tiny. I mean, they're probably 1, maybe 2 millimeters at the largest. And you put them in like a little strainer and just dip them in the water long enough to soak them for a couple seconds and then pull them out. And then.
Yeah, these were a quarter inch to like a little over an inch.
Oh, which is that's
kind of big.
Those will definitely be good for carp and catfish.
Cool. Well, I'll see if we can get them. And
new Freedom Fiends button.
Wait a minute. What was an inch?
Boils.
Ask me about my colon.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Was your button an inch or was your polyp an inch long?
My polyps. There were polyps that were an inch.
Damn, they're bigger polyps.
That's really huge. Yeah.
That is huge. That's huge. You almost sounded Scottish there. Randy.
They're huge.
That sounds huge.
They're huge.
You did. You just instinctively sounded like Dan for a minute.
That's troublesome. I need to see if I have a nodule on my vocal cords or something.
See if you have your polyps removed from your vocal cords.
Let's hear about the procedure. Let's hear about your colon asset forfeiture.
Well, I think we already did it about a week on that, but you could go back and listen to it. But what I did notice was there's my favorite show in the world called Peep Show, which is a British dark comedy about two roommates. It's kind of like The Odd Couple if instead of who The Odd Couple were, you know, one of them were very conservative – but not gay. And the other one was a bisexual raver, bedroom DJ loser who eats a lot of psychedelics. And it's pretty funny. I really like it. And it's on its ninth and final season. And there were like 3 years between the last two seasons. I mean, like really, like I thought it was never going to come back. And then they came back with a season. And there was a new one today and I watched it. And it has two characters in it who are middle-aged men proposing that they go together to get colonoscopies as a bonding experience. I like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not, well, it's...
Not my cup of tea.
anyone that's been through this knows that, that a good time is had by all.
Randy but unfortunately, and I are the only fiends out of 20 people.
Yeah, you know, it's got like it's like getting into a poker game and you're supposed to look around and figure out who the fish is. And you are always the fish at the colonoscopy.
What's the fish? Is that the loser?
Yeah. And yeah. Everybody else is having a good old time. Did you put your phone in your pocket and leave the recorder
on?
No, I did
not record it. No, but the place I went, though, it's pretty much a clinic that only does colonoscopies. I call it the drive-by colonoscopy clinic. So everyone's the fish there. And I was like the youngest person there. I mean, everybody was at least 10 years older than me because, you know, Wyoming, like they get their butt touched at the last possible minute. They're not very proactive about it. So
you're talking about the patients or the doctors and nurses?
The patients. No, the doctor actually is the only person in Casper, at least I've ever noticed, who I'm pretty sure has had plastic surgery on his face. And he was pretty young to have done that. But, you know, I guess you can afford it when you're specializing. I mean, I have to think it has to be money. I mean, you can't like giving colonoscopies enough to just decide, I'm going to do 5 of these a day, 7 days, 5 days a week for the rest of my life. You know, there must be a lot of money in it. And it must be to the point where you can just do it in your sleep.
Well, yeah, because it's just totally you're really a very elevated technician,
yeah,
rather than diagnostic. I mean, you have to know what you're looking at.
You're diagnostic, but it's very narrow.
It's so narrow. And I assume after you've done 1,000 of them, you probably know what you're looking at.
He said he's done 10,000 of them. And, that's what medicine is tending more and more towards, is advanced specialization to where most people aren't going to see a doctor very often. We're going to see nurse practitioners and nurses and clinicians and what are the people that take blood? Phlebotomists.
That is happening.
Yeah. And
you really, it's very good that you do go to someone like that. I mean, any profession is like that. And in my profession, I there's 100 different areas of law you can practice in. I do one thing, and I advertise it. I do only
DUI,
one thing.
GWI.
No, I do criminal law.
That's a pretty big batch of law.
Well, no, it's not compared to the many, many things you
can
do.
I have a friend. I have a friend who I knew really well as a kid, as a teenager, really good friends. And he does, he works on Wall Street, and all he does is sets up funds of funds. And he is a multi millionaire. But I didn't even know that existed. Like people, attorneys who set up funds of funds. You know, like
that would be very specialized.
Funds of hedge funds. Yeah. That means he's working for the New World Order, basically.
Yes.
We'll be back to talk about H.R. Giger's colon when we get back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government.
Here at CatMuff, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CatMuff, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Michael Libidine, Dr. Lou Standerfine, and Randy England.
Williams.
There's a saying around my house, stealing in your libertarian juices. It's from a joke. It was actually from something Boston Tea Party said on some forum. He was talking about, you know, people that worry too much about the New World Order coming to take away your guns, and, you know, things that are all real and real possibilities, but people who just spend 24 hours a day stewing in that kind of thought and worrying, and he called them libertarian, people who stew in their libertarian juices. And my wife likes to cook really good food and often marinates meat for about 8 hours before we eat it, cook it, and eat it. And we joke that it is stewing, that it's stewing in its libertarian juices. And I think the name of this episode is going to be Parboiling in Our Libertarian Juices. So I want to talk about H.R. Giger or Geiger. He's an artist I really like a lot. Randy, you're familiar with him, right?
I'm not familiar with Mr. Geiger, except to know that he's the guy that designed, is it the alien from the movie Alien?
Yes.
Way back when, which is... the guy who had to be like brilliant and twisted both. Right?
Yeah, that's the thing he's best known for. He also did a bunch of rock record covers. Probably the best known is "Brain Salad Surgery" by Emerson, Lake and Palmer. I'll bet Randy had that on his bong holder. I mean, his stereo in college. Did you?
I'm looking that up right now. I think I remember it.
Yep. He's a Swiss artist who has had a long and wonderful career and passed away recently. And there's a new documentary out about him called Dark Star, which is also the name of a Grateful Dead song, no relation.
Well, it's on Netflix, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on Netflix. And I watched about half of it. I recommend it, even though it's not a perfect documentary, because it's... To put it this way, I'm very interested in him, and I didn't watch it all the way through. I paused it halfway through to watch later. Whereas a really well-made documentary can be about football, and I hate football, and I still really want to watch it. You know, a good documentary kind of transcends it's about the human, the common thread. And this one was just about Giger or Geiger, and it's in German with subtitles, but he has a cat, which is pretty cool. But he looked pretty unhealthy in it. It was filmed right before he died, and he looks like he's on prednisone. He's got that kind of like jowly look that prednisone gives you, and he died from a fall, and he wasn't all that old to be dying from a fall. I think he probably had related to what I've got. That's why I want to know.
Wasn't he 72, I think? Like, it was last year, right?
I guess that's old enough to die of a fall, but I don't know. My dad's 93, and he gets in falls and goes to the hospital. But so I guess 72 is not too old to fall, Randy. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I wouldn't know because I'm not 72 yet.
I'm not saying you are, but you probably know people who are.
My dad. But he's alive, so what can I say?
Yeah.
Were the people at the clinic, you said the people there were all old. Were they, do you mean like old as me or?
I mean, they were older than me. They all looked between 60 and up.
Well, and,
you're supposed to get your first colonoscopy when you're 50. And so it looked like nobody was getting their first one. Or my other theory, people in Wyoming are so afraid of having their butt touched that they don't go until their doctor insists when they're 60.
Well, I didn't go till this year.
Yep.
And if you wait long enough, you don't have to do it anymore. They do not do diagnostic not diagnostic. Where they, oh, screening.
Preventative.
They don't screening. Do screening or preventative colonoscopies after age 70, I think.
So if I had not gotten one, I'd end up getting cancer because I would not get one at 70. I'd be dead by then, probably.
Yeah, well, it's different though. If you have a history, they can probably keep you doing it. But just to be taking a look. Just because you'd like to take a look, you know, to make sure you don't do it after that.
I like to look.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hashtag MWD colon. Yeah, Lou?
Kind of getting off the main topic just a touch. There's another
HR geeker.
There's another artist that passed away this year. His name is Don Featherstone. And he didn't do any paintings or anything like that. He is the inventor of the pink plastic yard flamingo.
Yep.
And he created them in 1957.
And yeah, you know, his art may not be as visionary or varied as Giger, but more people have seen that guy, Featherstone's art, for sure.
And I remember when the flamingos were hot and everybody needed them in their yard.
72?
No, late 50s.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
2 seconds, Randy.
I do not remember.
I don't know why they're called that. Maybe it's how much time we have if the Russians attacked us. I don't know. So, I am accepting... I really don't want to do this. I'm accepting open invitations for Freedom Fiends co-hosts, and I probably won't charge you if I like you. So send me tape. I need audio or audio and video to see what you can do. And a lot of people are not ready to be Fiends hosts. It takes a special something. We've even dismissed a couple. Well, we dismissed a couple and then like one quit, I think, over the other one, or at least just isn't returning my emails. And I'm not going to say any names and drag anybody into anything. It was part of the agreement was that they would just go their way and I would just be quiet about who they were. But you know, people might have noticed certain people aren't
here
anymore.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough.
Yeah. So let's see. Christopher Cantwell, I think that this article from today is about the Fiends. He says, by all means, if you're cheering for the destruction of Western civilization as your path to freedom, feel free to unlike this page and hate me forever. The Fiend, and he goes on to talk about how we need the borders. We need the borders. Yeah, he's turned into a neocon, but that is at the Fiends, cheering for the destruction of Western civilization. That is one of the tagline on our blog is laughing while Western civilization collapses. So he's talking to us. He loves
that's
us.
That's a little different. Are we cheering? I don't know if I cheer.
I do. He's actually been beefing with the art of not being governed. I guess he went and made he went and made a meme and put the art of not being governed logo on it. And
he misunderstood them though.
It got picked up by a bunch of neocon pages, and the art of not being governed picked up several thousand new followers because of it.
Yeah,
and it's been pretty interesting. But
is that a website?
Yeah, it's the a website friend of ours.
Is it by the guy that wrote the book?
No.
Oh,
no. Website is notbeinggoverned.com, and the Facebook page is The Art of Not Being Governed. So it'll put up a whole bunch of memes to challenge the cognitive dissonance of people and hopefully inspire cognitive dissidents. But Cantwell couldn't understand the idea of being opposed to government stopping immigration and also simultaneously being opposed to government subsidizing immigration. So he went off on his Cuckwell rant, and I think he's trying to get picked up with Breitbart. But yeah, he went off and he got all stupid. You can go check out the Anarcho Neocon Party Facebook page, and it's kind of dedicated to pointing out the nonsense of Cantwell. There's some memes on there making fun of him, but mostly it's just reposting his nonsense.
Boy, Anarcho Neocon, that's cruel. Just an anarcho conservative.
It's impossible. Really, something, think about it.
Well, let me know when he turns a war evangelical. That'll really.
What, be is that mood. A term?
Yeah. It's
he's an atheist, but
that's why it would be such a change.
Yeah. Well, he was also an anarchist, but he's stumping for Trump. He's a chump for Trump.
Yeah, he's only. I mean, think about how just lacking in backbone that is to say you're an anarchist and a libertarian and then come out stumping for Trump, not even just saying like, well, I kind of like some of that guy's ideas, like he wants him to win as a politician. And Cantwell's been using the phrase my country, which is just shouldn't come out of the mouth of anyone who's ever considered themselves anarchist or libertarian. Here's what I think. He's only ever been in it for the money and the attention. And there ain't much in libertarians because there's so few of them. And, they're all kind of like, I think it's hard for a lot of libertarians to have jobs and have lives because their ideas are so bold, fresh, and outrageous to people that, like, they lose jobs over it. Whereas, you know, he's doing what Molyneux did. Like, he plucked all the money he could out of libertarianism and is moving on to being a neocon. Because there's more money there. There's a lot more neocons than there are libertarians.
Yeah, but how can you call yourself an anarchist and become a thick libertarian, I guess you
would call it. He railed at thick libertarians for so long. And the thing is,
it's so crazy. How can you become one?
The issue isn't how can you become one. It's how can people, anybody, still take him seriously. I mean, I think there are people, from what I can tell, who are thinking that the whole thing is art. You know, like it's just him trolling people, but it's not. I mean, you look at the progression over the past 6 months or a year of him going from full on ANCAP to neocon brown shirt. It's Anarcho not neocon. A joke. Anarcho brown shirt. There you go.
Yeah. I'm hoping that he's in like celebritarian rehab filming season one with Jeff Berwick and somebody hacked his Facebook accounts. And by the way, this is the first time that I've ever ragged on Cuckwell on the air.
It is.
He's just getting really ridiculous because I'm not one to go ragging on fellow libertarians, unless, of course,
but he's not a libertarian anymore.
Right. But I can put up with the being an a-hole and everything else because that's his shtick, and he is a good writer. I mean, he's a very good writer. He's much better writer than he is a speaker because he doesn't come off as such a jerk as a writer. But he's jumping the shark.
Yeah. What is the libertarian rehab? Does it involve controlled substances or
celebritarian rehab?
It's a celebritarian. Okay, celebritarian.
Maybe Berwick and Jeff Berwick and Chris Cantwell will hook up in rehab, and they'll become a celebrity item, and we can call them like Bearwell.
Cuckwick.
Randy doesn't know what the cuck line. Do you know what that is when people say that, and why we say it about him?
What is the
Well, short for cuckold? And you know, cuckold is.
Oh, I know what that is. That's the husband who has been cheated on.
Right, yeah. and
Cuckwell calls everybody a cuck. It doesn't matter who you are, what you did. That's his favorite word. And I picture him as a chicken going around cuck 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 a doodle doo.
It's nothing new too. I used that word derogatorily in a song with my band Baby Opaque in 1982. So
well, the word's not born then. It's not. It's never been a compliment. I don't think.
Yeah, it's not, and it's actually a biological term too. There are whole classes of animals that are cuckolded by other animals. Like, there are animals that will slip their own eggs into another species' egg's nest. And the other species sometimes will kill them when they hatch, but often will just raise them. And it's really not known whether they know it's not their babies or not. Like, the birds that do it, insects. And I guess that's the opposite. I guess the animal that raises the other animal's offspring, it's kind of the opposite of a deadbeat dad, you know? It's someone who will raise someone else's.
Yeah.
It's a lightbeat dad.
I didn't finish Giger.
Good Samaritan dad.
And it is Giger. We looked it up. I just have one really sweet story about Giger from a dead friend of mine, Dave Brocky, the late singer in the band Guar, who I knew from Virginia. And I've told the story a few times about how I have 3 stitches in my forehead from where he accidentally hit me ahead with a bass guitar. And he died. He died a year or two ago, and it wasn't disclosed what of, but I would bet dollars to donuts it was drugs, from what I know about him. But he was a really smart guy, Dave Brocky was, and he was an art student going way back. So, you know, he was impressed with Giger before most people knew who Giger was. And he said that when his band Guar played in Zurich the first time, Giger came to see them and was like on the side of the stage, you know, over on the wings watching them. You know, he introduced him right before the show, and then, you know, they gave him the rock star seat, like on the stage, so you don't have to interact with anyone in the audience, like over in the wings away from view, but, you know, could stand there and watch the band. And he said that Giger was grinning the whole time and came up afterwards and shook Dave's hand, like while Dave's in full monster costume, kind of like very inspired by Giger kind of monster costume, probably, if you really think about it. And said, like, I love your band or something like that. And Dave Brocky telling me this story looked like he was about to start weeping. And he said, Michael, it was like a blessing from the Pope. I like that.
Wow.
So yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, your hero comes up and out of the blue comes up and says how much they like your work. I mean, that's about as good as it's going to get, right?
Yeah. And, you know, for some acid-eating, dark art, high sense of humor, you know, Virginia Commonwealth University, Richmond art dude, which is what Dave Brocky was, you know, I really think Giger would be like the Pope of what you do.
Yeah. Now, did you talk about the landscape?
Penis landscape.
Artwork? Yeah.
It's a painting. Yeah, go ahead.
I did the
Google is
the
Google not your search. French.
Definitely not tonight. So anyway, I did a Google search for H.R. Giger artwork, and the very first thing that shows up is Penis Landscape, 1973. Penis Landscape, or Work 219, Landscape XX, is a painting by H.R. Giger, created in 1973, airbrushed acrylic on paper-covered wood. It measures 70 by 100 centimeters. I believe that's the painting and not the, you know, penis.
The penis. It's one of the most graphic sexual images that is the least sexy image you've ever seen. I don't know, unless you are into corpofagia or something. I don't even know. It basically looks like a bunch of dead human members inserting into a bunch of other dead human parts in kind of a matrix of dirt and recrimination.
So it looks like Donald Trump's hair, as you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. So okay. Dead Kennedys, the band Dead Kennedys, used this as an insert poster with their band, with their record Frankenchrist, which I think came out in 1980, 1981. Does it say there, Lou? On that article?
Yeah, I had to close that page.
It was giving you nightmares while you're awake.
Yeah.
So Dead Kennedy's got...
It gave me colon polyps.
Yeah, Dead Kennedy's got arrested, basically, for this. Jello Biafra wanted to use it as the cover. The band vetoed it, so the cover, they just used a bunch of Masonic... what are the guys with the little cars and the fez hats?
Shriners.
Driving the little cars. And on the inside, they just had a poster that said Dead Kennedy's and had the penis landscape. It was 1985, and somebody watched their kid get this for Christmas, open it for Christmas, and took him to court. And, like, they got arrested for selling porno to a minor, and battling it basically bankrupted the band. So that's America for you. Wow. This is considered art in Europe.
It's a painting, though, right?
Yeah.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends. an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
And welcome back. This is Lou, and this is the final segment. I'm joined by Michael W. Dean and Randy
Yo. Ingram,
who is the Freedom Fiends legal correspondent.
And Wampus Cat.
So, yeah, and the Wampus Cat. So, I found something that's really interesting, a really good article. It's an older one. It's from mid-2014. But if you're into science and economics both, this is really cool. Yeah. So the headline of this is "More Corporations Using Tag and Release Programs to Study American Consumers," and this is Yeah, this is quite fitting for this time of year, you know, the Christmas season. And this comes to us from the news magazine The Onion.
One of my favorites.
New York.
Good research there.
Very reliable. Yes.
Yes. In an effort to more closely observe the group's buying habits and personal behaviors, a growing number of corporations are turning to tag and release programs to study American consumers, sources confirmed on Friday. According to reports, multinationals such as Kraft, General Electric, Goodyear, and Apple have embraced the technique of tracking down potential customers in their natural habitats of department stores and supermarkets, forcibly tranquilizing them as they shop, and then fitting them with electronic tracking devices that allow marketing departments to keep a detailed record of individuals' every movement and purchasing decision. This is really a good solid way to do it. It's quite humane, and they're really yielding some good data from this.
So now, the shoppers do not suffer in this?
No, not at all. See, what happens is somebody will have a rifle with a tranquilizer dart, and they will look for somebody in the particular demographics that they're looking for. Surprisingly, soccer moms are not really in demand these days because there's just so many of them. But anyway, they'll go and they'll shoot them with a tranquilizer dart, and then they have either like subdermal like RFID chip, or they have the old fashioned collar ones with the transmitter on there, and they'll just put that on their neck. And if you're worried about, you know, what happens after they get too old, most of the people just chew off the transmitters if it's the one around the neck.
I'd like to see that done.
Well, it's very humane, because when they drop one of them and go and put the tranquilizer on, they pull them off to the side of the aisle, and they leave them in the same department that they acquired the subject in. You know, because you don't want to take a guy out of like the hardware department at Sears and take him over to lingerie or bedding and housewares.
Corporations would do this if they could. They really would. And you know, think about what they'd actually be doing if they couldn't do what they do now, which is just use the internet to let everybody spy on themselves. I mean, I talked a little the other day about the Android operating system and how much more than other operating systems it demands you give it all your information and then allow it to all access it all the time to even work, pretty much. I mean, I have a theory. I don't think I really stressed this when I was talking about it the other day, but I kind of think that Android invented this operating system as a, you know, phishing device to get everyone to just bend over backwards to give them all of their information that Google didn't have yet. Because really, that's Google's that's their bread and butter, is information on every person on the planet. And they've basically come up with an operating system that does so many cool things if you give it all your information all the time that most people are like, well, why not? You know?
Now, I have heard that Google defines Bernie Sanders' economic plan as a phishing scam.
Yeah, yeah. It marked one of them as a phishing scam. Probably because Google's bots are smart enough to know when something's too good to be true and whatever he was offering was.
He was offering Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
It burns. Feel the burn.
It's been a good show, guys.
Feels.
Yeah, hey, thanks for coming on, Michael. Didn't expect you.
Yep.
Yeah. Dan, they're bigger polyps. Dan, they're bigger polyps. And to get bigger buttons, go to freedomfiends.com and download all the episodes and tell 200 friends.
There you go.
And Michael, we're going to have an update 2 years from now when you...
It won't take that long.
Not when that time comes, you are going to have the smoothest set of pipes. You're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Your insides are going to look like a baby's butt. So smooth. Yeah.
Wow.
So, worms.
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 Elementary worms.